Remember, to go north, you must journey south. To reach the west, you must go east. To go forward, you must go back. And to touch the light, you must pass beneath the shadow. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we decided to rebrand ourselves and relaunch at the same time the game did with a second edition. Each week we bring you a new dose of strategy insight and all-around geeky goodness. A huge thank you to Fantasy Flight Games, George R. Martin, and our patrons and fans. This wouldn't be possible without you. We have huge plans, and this year we get to enact those. We are going to be co-hosting Game of Thrones Nationals. Learn more at agotnationals.com. Also check out the community site at agot.cards, where you can find tons of community content and an event listing system. You know, welcome to episode 337 of the White Book. And I just, you know, reading this quote kind of in a vacuum from Koyth talking to Danny, I just had a thought about it that I had never really thought about before. So potential minor book spoilers for the listeners here and or show spoilers. So you may skip 5 minutes or so ahead in the episode if you don't want to hear it. But I just thought that last bit there about to touch the light, you must pass beneath the shadow. You know, the term like the shadow of death is pretty commonly used. It's never really crossed my mind before that perhaps this is an allusion that Dany might die and be resurrected similarly to Jon Snow. Thoughts?
I don't think so. That event only brings back hatchlings.
Oh, different event. This one gives you a whole new hand. It gives you a new life, you might say.
I think this plays into, not to get into like a super book nerdy discussion, but I think it plays into the Song of Ice and Fire and Jon and Dany being in this together. Because maybe it's one of those things where between the two of them, they fulfill all of those like prophecies. Like I know historically we look at Dany and go, okay, she's now done this one, but I've never taken the time to look and see if Jon has fallen into any of those as well.
Me either. That sounds like that's worth some research. I bet someone online's worked on that, but I've not gone looking for it before, so. I may do that another time and not make the listeners wait for it right this second.
I mean, also, how much do we trust Quaithe? We don't really know what the hell Quaithe is up to.
Also true. Really she could be anybody what is after that, Max.
Yeah, what is her deal?
Good question.
She's one of those, what's her deals, Varys, her... More of them, I'm sure. Littlefinger, what is Littlefinger's end goal?
I mean, Littlefinger's angle? To sit the throne in the end, right? To have as much power as he can possibly muster?
That is what it would seem like.
We'll see if it's anyway. True. Yeah, anyway, we're probably supposed to go ahead and talk about some stuff with the cards. I mean, we had a whole plan for this episode, and that plan was not to analyze the books and or show. We'll save that for another episode. Well, anyway, I'm Will. Also with me, obviously, are Scott and Kyle. So,
howdy, everyone.
Yeah. Welcome back to Team Kingsguard.
Yes, the king must be safe. And to do so, today we are going to look back at this past cycle and see what have been hits or misses. Did Bestow actually work out as well as Danny's first foray into a new mechanic in the game? And we're going to look at cool prizes. Regional prizes are actually pretty.
Yeah, I think that's some pretty sweet news to go ahead and hit on. Regional prizes look pretty awesome. Let's take a look here. So first up, we've got a nightmares for every participant, it says. And the nightmares, I think, is kind of a little different style of art than we've seen on anything so far. It's supposed to be related to Danny's journey through the House of the Undying, and it's cool. Very, very magical looking. Really, really dig it.
A little bit of a Dohara's color scheme.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm curious. Oh, go ahead, Kyle.
I was like, I like that it's totally different art than the current version. You know, instead of just the blown up or recropped stuff or recycled images maybe from first set. I like that it's original. And I love that it's a card that sees a lot of play in a lot of different decks.
Like, there's that. I mean, this one is a great choice on that front. Well, one thing I was wondering, do you guys recall how many of the participation promos regionals have had in the past? I honestly don't remember. And of course they say, you know, there'll be one for everybody. I'm curious if a lot of regionals this year might be able to do more than one per player, which would be awesome because I want a lot of these.
I think it's been 64. Don't quote me on that, but I think something like that is usually the number of these that are in a stack.
Gotcha.
Or maybe wrong.
So I think a lot of regionals this year can probably do two per player. As a guess, anyway.
Well, yeah, we'll just have to see. And I mean, I'll be honest, just looking at through the pool of price support, like, they do a good job with this. So maybe, you know, they up the number if they're like, and you'll see more of these, hoping to have bigger tournaments. You just never know.
Yeah. Well, should we take a look at what some of those other prizes are that you mentioned? What do we have for the top 16? Anybody?
So this is probably, in my opinion, let me read these a little bit more. I know a lot of people go bananas for these, so I'm not going to poo-poo them that hard, but it's 15 acrylic tokens for Bera. So A, kudos on it being 15 and not 5 or 10 or shitty numbers that we've seen in the past. Kudos for not messing that up. But yeah, I've just never been one that to use them, but I know a lot of people are a big fan of these and like to collect all the houses. So kudos for that.
Kudos for actually giving 15. Because lately they've been not doing that.
Yeah, for all the regular league kits or whatever they're called these days.
Yeah. Also, kudos for someone wanting to win the meme contest and realizing that Thrones community loves Seth Botley.
Yeah, I guess we'll jump on that one in a sec. The top 8 get a really sweet playmat. I honestly love the look of this this map of King's Landing. It's a really different style than they've done before. I I know I've heard of some people framing some of the mats with art that they really like. Like, this is the first one that I can personally see framing and hanging somewhere, but I'm a real sucker for maps. So.
I like it because it's neutral art, so if someone really likes this, you can always use it. Especially if, like, a lot of newer players, you know, they get their first mat and they're like, oh, this is sweet, but it's Greyjoy, and I don't know if I want to use it when, like, I'm playing Tyrell or Lannister or what have you. So a neutral mat like this, for a lot of people, you know, if this is their first, like, big, like, high placement, it's good that it's a mat that you can use with any house. And the, like I said, the style is different. I like it. I think it's a good choice for a regional mat.
Yeah, agreed. Any thoughts on the mat there, or are you just itching to really get to the top four, Scott?
I like the mat a lot. I guess we'll talk about what I think about Triss when we get to the actual subject of our cast today. But my love for Triss, just like Asha's love for Triss, will never die. And the meme contest that we didn't even know was happening. So it's a wooden faction card for Greyjoy, but it has the House Botley sigil and has Botley under it. And if you go on the Facebook page and you're a member of this community, you know that House Botley has a place in many Thrones players'
hearts. Very near and dear, I think, to many folks.
Kyle, I do love that in the paragraph about it, well, not paragraph, it's like one really long sentence, but they talk about, like, players will be reminded by their wooden faction card that the support House Greyjoy has long received from House Botley. Like, that somehow is like a legitimate answer. Like, we made this House Botley house card so that, you know, because they like the Greyjoys. Meanwhile, you've got like Barra power counters. So it's like, this is just you throwing out a wink and a nod to the community, which, I mean, kudos to you for doing it. I really like that. But I just think it's funny the justification they try to give for the people who aren't in on the joke. Also, I also like that if you look in the scroll work on the side of it, you can see like the little Greyjoy octopus thing, and like I think this is well done. It's a neat card. And normally I really hate these wooden house cards, but these are good.
I had no idea you hated them. I think they're pretty cool, personally.
I don't know. I think it's the texture. I can't even tell you why. No, I just...
You get splinters?
I don't know. Anytime I get them, if my wife likes them, I keep them. Otherwise, I trade it for other stuff. So if I win one, we'll have to see if it passes the wife test. Though, the House Botley is pretty cool, so I'll probably keep that one. But we're getting way ahead of ourselves. I mean, that's a long time away.
Have faith, you will win.
There you go. Speaking of winning, and then we've got a pretty sweet trophy. I like the shift that FFG's made to these like art trophies. They're pretty cool.
I just want FFG to buy a really nice 3D printer and just 3D print everything and put people's names on it afterwards.
That would be pretty sweet. Although I'm sure some people wouldn't enjoy, you know, not having their prize the instant they win.
But they can have their name on their prize. Let's be honest here. That's what's more important.
I mean, unless you're planning on selling it later for Buku profit or something.
I mean, then you could just put whoever will pay me the most money on the bevel it into that 3D print. But FFG will never buy a 3D printer.
You don't think they will? I bet they will.
I don't know. Not a nice one.
Okay.
They need to get a really nice one to do this.
Got
to
buy a cutting edge.
If I could see... Or send it to Shapeways or somewhere. FFG sent it to Shapeways. I'd be very impressed, FFG. We got to call FFG and make this happen. But besides that,
yeah,
it's nice. I don't know. I think these trophies don't really impress me. I do think it'd be nice to have something else besides these trophies. I'd be more likely to, even as, I guess, cliche as it would look, to have like a medal that you'd put on someone if they won in the Olympics or something, like a gold or silver medal. I think at least that I could hang on my wall and be like, whatever. I don't think I'd ever keep one of these awards, you know. Wouldn't really take up space in my...
I don't know if I've ever seen one of these in person, to say, but I really do miss the days of... I never liked the glass, like, egg shape, but I liked the... I don't even know if they were glass, but they look like glass trophies. I thought that was a slick look, especially when they got into, like, the cut octagon ones and stuff like that. I don't know about this. Like, at first blush, it just doesn't do anything for me. You obviously can't, like, trade it. It's like, hey, do you want this first place regional trophy? Like, I don't know. I would keep it, and I'd probably hang it just because, I mean, taking first out of regionals is a big accomplishment. Like, let's not diminish that. It's a huge deal in the community, but I don't know about that one.
It's not pretty. Not nice. We can do nicer. FFG, do nicer for us.
Overall, though, I think this is a marked improvement from previous years. I think this is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I think it's a great kit.
Small thing that is probably worth noting, and this may have been true in previous years, and I just don't know it. But I like that it's a... I like that the buy is good for this year and next year. I don't know if that's a policy that's new or if I've just never noticed it. I also like that the corner is cut for redemption, so you still get to keep the card. I remember in previous years, I'm like, this is a neat memento of the time I won a store tournament, like at my local store, or the time I won a regional. Like, the card is neat, and it sucked that you had to... Depending on the tournament you were at, because some people are like, yeah, whatever, keep it. But have to give it away for no real purpose, it felt like. So it's cool that you just clip the corner and you still get to keep the card if you want it. I just like that that's an option. Little things, but, you know, little things add up.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I had not even really thought about that. Tell you what, let's call it good on regionals, and let's kick on over to our retrospective. We've just wrapped up a whole brand new cycle. Should be, as I understand it, the last we see of Bestow, and so on. So maybe we could take a little time to take a look back through the looking glass at cards from this cycle, and what panned out or what didn't according to our expectations. What did we kind of over expect that didn't turn out, and did anything surprise us and turn out to be a lot better than expected? And in general, of course, what do we think about Bestow now that we've seen everything?
So I think there are two ways we can do this. We can go pack by pack in order and then do overall. I think each pack, we know what are the things that we thought would have an impact and things that ended up having an impact, so we don't have to go card by card.
Can I don't think that's structured enough. I think let's go pack by pack.
A bit more difficult. Like I said,
there's no need to go every card, but let's hit pack by pack and then chat about the stow and kind of overall at the end.
All right, so the first pack was the Archmaester's Key. Cards of note that either we thought would have an impact or have had an impact, I would say, are the Rat Cook, Queen's Men, Traitor to the Crown, Ashmark, Acolyte of the Waves, Nugget's Ribs, Doria Sand, Water Gardens, Valet O'Harris, the Iron Bank. Lots of cards that we thought would have an impact. So it seems for a minute that stewards might be a thing, and the Rat Cook looked fun for a little while, but that hasn't panned out in hindsight. So that was a miss, I think we all would agree. We also thought the Rise of Barrer might be coming. We'll see Solis later when we go through this. Queensman has proved to be a great card, a banner card. Traitor to the Crown is one of the cards that we thought might have brought Barrer back into resurgence. Hasn't really done so. Both these Lanny cards, the Ashmark and the Master at the Rock, we thought could have big impacts. We have yet to really see them. Ashmark is probably the first big bestow card as well that was seen to possibly have a big impact, and it hasn't really shown up. I also think a good amount of that might be how poorly Lanny is placed in the current meta outside of Rush. Acolyte of the Waves and Naga's Ribs, I think, were the start of seeing Drowned Gods become a thing. And now so more than ever, just after Someone Always Tells Her's release, I think Drowned Gods are here. Bloody Acra was kind of overlooked, did really well at toward the World's time, kind of fallen from favor and doesn't really seem to fit in current target builds. Doria, I think people underestimated and has become a 1x in probably every Martell deck and has been super strong. The Water Gardens also has become super strong, and a linchpin in Martell Wolf and also just Martell in general. The Iron Bank was a card that when it first came out made huge headlines and seemed like it was going to be one of the most important cards in the game, and quickly fell off the rails as soon as Nothing Burns came out. And finally, Valet O'Harris is probably the most common reset in the game right now, and did a lot of what Aaron wanted to do.
That is interesting. I feel like maybe Valor didn't get pushed into the meta or hasn't stayed pushed as hard as Aaron was saying it would. But it has definitely still had impact.
I think O'Harris, the more I think about it, you know, the concept, especially there, and it's something we didn't really, at least I didn't really think about a lot when it came out, outside of, you know, stopping swarm decks and some of these big beefy character things, was, you know, bestow cards give you an advantage on O'Harris because that's gold invested in a character that doesn't count for your O'Harris turn. I agree. I don't think it's gotten quite the impact I thought it would. Now, in a world with shadows coming, I think this becomes, I think it gained some strength there. I think the synergies continue to line up where between bestow and shadows, you have alternate routes to invest in that you can then hit your opponent and leverage that plot. So I think this is a plot that will always kind of be in the back of your mind and will pop up in tournament winners every once in a while.
Yeah, I don't think it did everything you wanted to do. I think it actually should have been 8 instead of 10, I think, is the biggest issue. I also think it should have been removed from game instead of to the bottom of the deck.
Oof.
I don't think that's the biggest hit. I'm not saying kill the guys. You just don't want them shuffling them back in. You're making an effect. on the state. But maybe that's harsh in your mind, I guess, Will.
But, back and forth, but I don't know if it's necessarily worth debating that theoretical.
No. Anyway, it definitely doesn't have the strength of Margulis, but it is something that I think is healthy for the game and should exist.
Yeah, just the threat of it existing, I think, keeps the meta in a better place.
Yeah,
I mean, I think everyone thinks so. So I think, for me, that's the Archmaester's key.
Well,
is there anything for you guys that else you would like to touch on?
Yeah, there is one I want to touch on the opposite side of things. A card that kind of wildly outperformed our expectations, but maybe not in a way that people like. And I think that would be Mag the Mighty, which I think when it came out, people definitely had a little bit of a Shaga wow factor. Thought, okay, you know, maybe there's some kind of aggro deck fit into. And people definitely did not see him becoming a linchpin in a couple different combo deck builds and that kind of craziness. So I think he really outperformed.
Yeah, I mean, if we want to talk about combo decks, we have both the Drown God things here too. And Drown God is the passive power, not challenging, not fully combo, but semi-combo deck talk of the moment.
Indeed. I don't know if we delve 100% into that deck at the moment. That might be a whole topic of its own. But
yes, I believe so. And I believe it's a talk you should have with Jesse on. It's Jesse, praise to the Drown God every night. submerges, barely survives. He's been drowned
108
times
at this point.
Yeah, but I think that's mostly it. Dario Naharis is another big body. Magna Mighty is a stupid card. Oathkeeper is another really stupid card. So Oathkeeper, in theory, I think is fine. But the fact that Oathkeeper just says, go get a dupe for your big dudes that aren't in Tyrell, when you're bannering from Tyrell, which is the big dude renown house, I'm not sure how great that is for the game. But besides that, I think Solid Pack came out guns blazing for the cycle. Kyle, do you have anything else you want to hit on?
Not really. I think the big points were hit for this one.
Why don't you us off on the journey pack?
Yeah. And I never feel like you see a lot of WoW cards in that first pack. Seems like they try to push the OMG, this is like the why we made this mechanic cards for packs 4, 5, and 6. So I don't really hold the fact that pack 1 has a ton of all-stars in it against it from a bestow standpoint, but let's see.
I mean, they have a lot of WoW cards in this pack. I mean,
in Archmaster's?
When this pack came out, Doharis was a WoW card, Ribs was a WoW that's going to be something card. People thought Ashmark was a WoW card. I'm trying to think if anything else here was thought of as a WoW card.
I feel like Water Gardens kind of was.
I think to the more hardcore serious players it was, because they understand the economy curve and the importance of it more.
And just being able to Venomous Blade for free mid-game constantly is huge.
It's strong. I mean, I think Water Gardens, it might be out of all these cards the best card, but I'm trying to think back to the headspace at that time, and I'm not sure people realized how good it was going to become.
Sure.
But Kyle, why don't you take us on a journey?
Sure. Pack 2, I think, highlights. Definitely here you're looking at the Triss Botley, inspiration for our top 4 prize, apparently. Which I think was solid. I think a lot of people thought, you know, this was going to really bowing over Fleabottom, and, you know, the game was going to change. I think he's still very strong, but I don't know if he necessarily curbed Fleabottom as much as we thought he would. One of the cards I was most excited for in this pack, House of Black and White, and I have never built a deck with it. I kept looking at it, and I was like, I'm going to build a deck around this and just kill people with gold. It's going to be awesome, and I have never gone and done that. What else jumps out at me? Obviously, House with the Red Door. Corey's agendas are always going to be are big game changers. Not a lot of agendas play with deck building restrictions. You don't necessarily see that a lot, and all of Corey's tend to do that. And I like this one. I think it's super great for the game. It's balanced. It's safe from a, like, a abuse standpoint for the most part. So real great. Consuming Flames.
So
go ahead.
No, so I was going to say, while we're on the house, I think before we were starting this the podcast, this I think is one of the bigger talks and debates of this cycle. Was House with the Red Door a success? Because compared to 1.0, which I didn't play, you guys played, I think, from what I understand, it is significantly worse. And I think they didn't protect the location enough. When cards like Dagmere, which I think is a card that shouldn't exist anyway, I think it's a stupid swingy card, and exist, that significantly hurts this. Same thing, card doesn't see too much play, ridding the Bay of Ice, and plus the ability of Frozen Solid or Seized by the Guard to go on this and basically nullify your agenda on turn one for one gold, can be really devastating and really strong. I know this is one of the most loved agendas in First Ed, and as First Ed players, I'd love to hear your thoughts. Is if this was a failure as a redo of the
first, I don't know if agenda. Failure, like, failure seems real harsh. I do agree it is not as strong. In First Ed, there were very few cards that could get around the agenda protection. Whereas this one seems less so. But I think that also, as I think once the agenda came out, it put a big, being so protected, put a big restriction on what you could do with cheap locations. Because you always had to think about, okay, is that abusive as a red, as a, in this case, House with the Red Door agenda location. This way, you get the same, like, built-in perk of some protection, but you know you're going to start the game with it. I think it's much more balanced. I think it's harder to make a tier one deck out of it because of that lack of total protection. But I think it's fair. I think it's still something that's fun to play with. And you have to remember, not every deck you're sitting there like, okay, is this shit going to win Gen Con? But I think this is a great for casual players, for meta knights. I know in the past, our group has done like House of the Red Door. That's what it's called now. Like tournaments where everyone has to bring a deck with that agenda. Like it jazzes things up. And I really appreciate that from a meta health standpoint.
Will, what do you think as the other First Ed player? Were you happy with how House of the Red Door turned out as compared to House of Dreams?
Relatively happy. I don't know. I feel like it's obvious that they felt it was maybe a little too strong in first edition and wanted to dial it back some in second edition. And, yes, I'm worried that maybe they went one step too far in dialing it down. It's still the sort of card that folks are going to keep coming back to and experimenting with because it's so scalable, maybe is close to the term I'm looking for right now, versatile. I mean, it, like, every new location fits those qualifications. It comes out from now till whenever this rotates. Like, those are all gonna require, you know, kind of new processing to find out whether they're worthwhile with this. I think maybe partly a little bit it's kind of gotten a double whammy in that it came out in the in a bestow cycle, and you know, there's all these cool, interesting locations in this cycle that just don't work with this because bestow's not going to work. So I feel like that might be at least one piece of the puzzle, along with things like being hit by frozen solid, like you said, that just add up to make it feel even worse at the moment. But people are going to have to keep examining it, you know, going forward.
The other big card in this pack, the last one I really wanted to touch on, is Consuming Flames, which I think was, I don't want to say a linchpin, but like additional burn effect, target burn needed to get off the ground. Another terminal effect, beefy burn, 3 strength is solid. I think this was the card that people said, all right, let's look at targ burn as a theme in a build.
Yeah, so I think by this point, targ fealty was already there, right? It just was another level. You guys know by now, if you're listening, that when I think a card's stupid, I just say it. Shouldn't have been designed. I'm really don't think Consuming Flames was a good design decision. But I think also this comes down to a lot of the problems that Targ has, that its economy is based around discard, but with Flea Bottom, discard becomes a good thing a lot of the time. So it's a repeating issue. It's also harder to play around, right? Like, Drac is one less gold, sure, but it's something you could see what's happening. There's not a standing dragon or Danny. Is there a way to get it out? That's a safe way. Consuming Flames is much more versatile, and that's strong. So the other cards that I think are noteworthy is Old Town is another stupid card. At first, I guess you could think it looks like a cute combo card. You get control top of your deck, but you're basically playing something. Your deck is probably 75% characters. You name character. 3 out of 4 times, you'll end up drawing a card and getting a power for nothing much, which is kind of stupid. Kingslayer is probably the worst card in the game.
Yeah, that's worth pointing out. Everyone thought it was bad, and it turned out to be exactly as bad as we all thought.
Triss Botley, I actually really like it as a design, and I think it'd be healthy if Triss Botley was a neutral and something like a 3-for-2 or a 3-for-3. I think this effect on the game could have been really positive, as Kyle mentioned, that maybe it would have helped rein in Fleabon and rein in a bunch of the generic type of decks, but the fact that only one faction has access to it, and they'll still play it, but it's in a relatively expensive slot. It isn't something that often is used for a pressure valve kind of effect. I think I would have loved to see him as like a 3-for-2 neutral or something like that. So it would have been a stronger effect for the game, kind of like how, to me, it's almost like Littlefinger, like it's a utility piece type of card. Stormcrows. It's also really stupid. Arion was great for a little while, and I think she's still niche in some decks. The card that Kyle didn't mention that I think needs to be mentioned is Gates. Gates, I think, was a necessary card, took him out. And people thought Gates was bad when it first came out. And I think probably on this cast, you probably gave it a bad review. But in hindsight, the problems that were done to factions like Pharah by the economy cards last cycle, and how much worse, those cards are compared to the other economy cards is absurd, and Gates helps catch up to those economy problems. Red 1 Straits is really good, and this in some ways is a cheaper red wine straights, but you're giving your opponent a buck. But in a lot of decks, that's more than worth it. And I think that probably ended up the best card in the pack. Will, do you have any other thoughts on
the journey? No, I think that that covers things pretty well on that.
So why don't you take us to
the King's Moot. You know, let's see. I feel like kind of highlight cards to hit out of this one, and I'm going to mix it up a little here with highs and lows. I feel like Ramsey Snow kind of overperformed a little bit from expectations. Bounty of High Garden is kind of in a Mag Mighty spot where it kind of came out with a, that's cute sort of reaction, and then turned out to be capable of some pretty bonkers stuff. Past that, Asha Greyjoy, I think was rated extremely high. Actual practice has maybe come down a little bit from that. She's still very good, but has kind of dialed off some from the Greyjoy storm that we had mid-cycle after this came out. Part of that, I'm sure, is kind of the bandwagon popularity effect. The Skazodon, some folks, I know Aaron on this cast was very high on the Skazodon, but I don't feel that ever really panned out. I saw, you know, it tried out a little bit, and then it kind of faded from view. I think, you know, even with things like Flea Bottom and the like, turning a discard into more of a benefit in a lot of ways. You know, cards in hand to discard is still a resource to manage, and turns out folks could get gold in other places, save those cards to, you know, do other things with, to discard to Consuming Flames or Quotho or whatever it might be. And yeah, I feel like maybe those are really the main standouts out of this pack.
So I think the thing to notice, we thought King's Moot was going to be insane. I don't think I've ever seen it do anything once.
That's also true. It's dropped so far back off of the radar that I didn't even remember to mention it just now, even while I was looking at Asha right above it in the list.
I actually think Asha overperformed. I thought she was going to be very good, but I didn't realize how ridiculous she is. I think she has one too many things. I think she's also one of those cards that I would call a misprint card. That makes sense. Cards that shouldn't have been printed or needed to be dialed back. One more thing. I think
not necessarily game breaking, but just out of the mold enough that if you did it again, you'd dial it back, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, she should lose a key. She needs to lose a stealth, I think.
Yeah, I could see that.
Because it's too good for Reigns. Greyjoy Reigns is already a very good deck, and then you gave them a stealth 5 strength intrigue icon. I don't know if that was good for the game. I think the prevalence now that Burn has in the meta and things jumping is holding that back from being a bigger problem. I think the biggest problem is still combo. So I don't think it has become a discussion point, but I still don't think it's good. I thought Zansteeds might have become a problem. Haven't seen them ever. Laughing Lotus is very good too. And Withering Cold we didn't talk about. That's another one of the cards that we thought was going to be part of the Barra comeback. Hasn't happened. But the plot is very effective, and I think will find a place eventually, but as of yet, it hasn't really found the place.
Yeah, there's a couple little cutesy things folks have, you know, talked about with it or related things, but it hasn't been like an overall force, so.
Okay, should we go to favor?
Any thoughts or?
Oh yeah, sorry, didn't mean to cut you off, Kyle.
No, I agree with all things said. I do think that as a standalone on her own strength, Asha is probably the best card in this pack. Just because she made. So that whole Greyjoy pillage thing was smoothed out by her. I think she stands alone by herself. But I think the way, the clever ways people have found to leverage Ramsay Snow again is a huge deal. But other than that, there's nothing super huge in this pack that jumps out at you. Champ card, Withering Cold. I think it did the same thing it did in Versted, where everyone's like, oh shit, this is amazing. And it just has not seen the play that you think it will.
And I think it's just, you gotta find the deck. I mean, Barra's the deck that would most want this. I just don't think Barra has found the home yet. They hurt, I think Barra was hurt way too much by having that worst decon card of the last cycle. And having too many things overdone by Dom. So, something in the first pack of this cycle was Naga's Ribs, which basically is better than the Iron Throne in most cases. And is a Greyjoy card, and Dom is what probably the biggest force behind how Barra works, because it's how their econ now works of the two drop econ location, as well as how their signature power grab passive location works, as well as how their King Stannis works and their big Mel works, etc., etc. So it's a really important part of how Barra works, and now Greyjoy can do it better. And I think that also is partially what's keeping Barra down, and I'm not sure how they overcome that. Unless there's a card that's even more ridiculous for Dom than Naga's Ribs.
Yeah. I mean, I think you hit some of the nail on the head as far as kind of diluting Barra's effectiveness. So that's the breaks at the moment.
Yeah, so we'll see what can possibly be stronger for Dom than Naga's Ribs. But I hope so for Barra's sake, because I like nailing things. All right, so let's go to favor.
Sure.
So the first card we thought would be strong was Nymeria, and she ended up pretty strong. I don't think she's a game-breaking card, but she is very good. Solis and Dragonstone Castle, these were the two final cards that we thought was going to bring Barra back, and I think they have both proven to be very good cards, but just not enough.
Agreed.
As we just talked about how Barra isn't there yet. Support of Harlaw, everyone thought was strong, and it's strong. I don't think it's a game-breaking card. I think it's fine. Plinky Town, I think people thought would be better than it has been. And Shandy Stone, people thought was good. I think it ended up better than people thought. Seized by the Guard is a card that some people think was great, some people think needs to exist but isn't really playable. I think it's somewhere in that middle ground where it is good that this card exists, but some decks will feel like they need it, some don't. Greensight, it's an agenda, so we have to talk about it. I don't think it has seen a tier 1 deck. I'm not sure if it ever will. Lately, I've been trying Drowned Gods out of Greensight for some extra Naga's Ribs, dead people. It actually has been my favorite Drowned God deck. So maybe that'll be the home for Greensight. Because those two things go together a lot as far as the lore goes, Greensight and the Drowned God faith. Very closely associated. And finally, King of the North has been the biggest card of this pack, for sure. So King of the North, I think, when it first came out, we all thought the King note on it was kind of cutesy, but wouldn't matter much, and it was a good card for the game, and would be a control card. And we thought it was awesome. And now, at least for me, I think the King note on this ruined the card, and I hate this card because it just says get a King out. But it is very strong. If you're running Kings, you should run this.
and you should put kings in your deck if they're suboptimal, just because this plot says kings are good.
I mean, that arguably was maybe the goal for the last couple sets than anything else. So, and it pushed kings, all the kings and the attachments and such we've gotten seem to suggest FFG wants to do that. Maybe we just misunderstood.
Well, this is a Jakob card. It's not an FFG card, so maybe Jakob said, you guys aren't getting your job done that you wanted to get done. I'll get it done for you.
There you go.
Here's how you do it.
Champ cards often do that kind of thing.
They fix FFG not getting what they wanted. But maybe. I think this is probably designed outside of that. Hey, and who knows? Maybe Jakob just didn't think of the king part and was told, you should add a king part. That is also possible, I suppose.
Yeah.
Kyle, any notes you want to put in about Favor of the Old Gods? I think this is the weakest pack that we've covered from the cycle so far.
I agree with that. There's nothing in it that jumps out at you as, like, the other ones at least have had, like, you know, some high all-stars in it. There are some solid cards in here, but I remember thinking Yunkai was going to be the bee's knees.
Yeah.
And I just haven't gotten to really play with that.
Before.
There is. And I hear it's really good. And Greyjoy Greensight's a thing, but that's the only build with it I've ever seen. Which made me sad, because I thought it was like a weird... I never thought it was going to be a great agenda, but I would have liked to have seen some more clever uses for it. We also think if you can come up with a way to use it so it's so beneficial that you run into your agenda, probably getting into a bad place, so... One of those things.
Kyle, would you like to take the faith?
Yeah, this is probably the strongest pack on the backs of really one character, but then some things that I really love. Let's just get out of the way. Sir Pounce, OP, restrict, right? Just, I know a lot of people are going to be like, this card's not that great, and why did we waste a slot to it? And at the same time, I will counter that by saying there are a lot of cards in a pack / cycle that are not that great, but at least this one kind of made me chuckle. So kudos for that. Yeah, the all-star here is Danny, right? I mean, just rock and shock Danny. Everything she's performed as expected. Like we talked about earlier, this Greyjoy gets a ton of two key pieces to the ground god tech. That is obviously starting to bake a lot of fruit and rock out. Barra continues to get cards that just do not push it over the edge. We get another champ card. A lot of champ cards in this cycle. I have not seen a lot of Cold Hands. I think being Night's Watch does it a lot of disservice. I realize thematically that's where he belongs. And Night's Watch does have a lot of chuds to throw under him to steal a good guy, but I think just 5 cost is not where Night's Watch wants him. So, which makes me sad, because I really wish champ cards got the love they deserve for what it takes to get them. And of course, you know, 2 cost Aria, you know, no saves, here's some dupe hate. I just wish she wasn't Aria, because core Aria is so good. But you know, Greyjoy's big in your meta. Like, having a silver dagger like that's pretty sweet. Besides that, though, there's some things in this pack that are worth noting, like glancing through it. High Sparrow, you know, potentially stops, you know, combo if you really, really, really hate combo. Yeah, overall, you know, there are some real game changers depending on what you're trying to do.
Yeah, so I think Cold Hands is actually really good, but I think we've been talking about how Barak is in the mark. I think Night's Watch is even further down the line as far as top factions right now. I think the bottom three are Lanny, Barak, and Night's Watch. Lanny has a 1 T1 build in Crossing, but that is it. Besides that, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the Faith Militant as an agenda. I think it actually is overperformed by the Stark build that Jerry, as we had on in our previous episode, made popular with Fat Cat, whatever you want to call her. I think Compelled by the Faith has proven to be stronger than expected too, by being able to avoid resets, taking all the power away from your dudes. Besides that, I think most things have been as expected. I think these were the final two Drowned God cards that needed to come out to make Drowned God T1, which I think also should be noted. And I think Drowned God is a T1 deck now. Will, any other notes?
This pack I feel like had a couple things that were so standout and straightforward. Danny and such that it's hard to say much else about him. Same, I think, with Arya. I guess maybe the only other one I've got a little thought on is the Faith Militant agenda, which I think is more of a flavor kind of quirk or bug of mine. I have mentioned in passing before that it kind of weirds me out that the faction that it is best with is the faction most associated with the old gods, Stark. I mean, sure, you can say it's the Tullys, really, but like the faction is Stark. So it just feels weird that none of the houses that actually worship the Seven really have support for this agenda. But yeah, there you go. Flavor issue there more than anything else.
Yeah, I think Compelled by the Faith doesn't seem like a Seven plot either. The effect. But.
Yeah.
That's that. So I think we have one more pack to go.
That sends it to me for someone always. Actually,
okay.
And this one, I'm going to be real honest here. I think it is really hard to actually have any sort of verdict on this. PAX itself has been out for 2 weeks at the time we're recording this, so I don't really know that things have kind of settled down and sorted out yet. But I'll, I guess, maybe kind of second some of my expectations from the review. I think To Go Forward, You Must Go Back is going to stabilize as a very respectable event choice for Targaryen. I think the Crow as a Trixie Bird is very interesting, but has such a high skill cap that it's not going to see my play in the end. And Someone Always Tells, I think, is going to see more play on the back of the consistently predictable event cancel, though the plot cancel is obviously still a strong possibility. Oh, and, you know, Driftwood Cudgel turned out to do some pretty silly stuff, so we'll see if that holds up or if any sort of FAQ update reigns that interrupt chaining in at all.
Yeah, the Cudgel is a stupid card. It's another card that's a misprint. But yeah, I pretty much agree with you. I want to see Someone Always Tells and the Quirrell become good cards. And I think like you need to be a sand level player to really play the Crow as a Trixie Bird to the level it needs to be. But I don't think they're honestly going to see much play. I think the Cudgel is ridiculous. I think Sept and Salador is something that I find really interesting and might be good in the future. The problem that he has is Venomous and New Danny. Bastard of Night Song I think is very solid, but he's not going to push Barrow over the edge. And 7-pointed Star, I think, might have a place in getting some other Faith Militant decks to another level.
Kyle,
any thoughts?
This was a pack that I thought was going to do a lot more than it did. To be frank, I mean, there's like you said, there's some good cards in here, but there's just another. This is another pack that suffers from like name issues. Like Mace, I don't think is bad, but it sucks that it's a Mace because you don't want to run it over the other one. So there's some stuff like that. But now for being the last pack in the cycle, you would hope for more than what you got, but what is what it is.
You get what you get, and you don't get
it. I've always heard it as don't throw a fit.
True, true.
Very, very interested in these regional differences. Wow, that just killed the conversation. My apologies, guys.
Yeah, your region, jeez, man. Your region sucks.
Killer. Well, in that case, maybe we go ahead and kick it over to kind of the party wrap up thought. Since this is the end of what we see of Bestow, what do you guys think about that mechanic in the end? Honestly, you know, it's got a couple standout cards. Begging Brother and Astapor come to mind, though those were from the prior cycle, which kind of strikes me as interesting because I think Danny had said somewhere that they were going to really push and kind of do more interesting things, kind of surprise us with exploring what Bestow could do in this cycle. But I really think the most playable ones were probably in the first set. I think the biggest effect is kind of a secondary kind of ripple effect from it, in that they really had to pump up the economy available in the game to make Bestow work. And then it turns out that, you know, just having a lot better economy makes everything else better. And you can just skip a lot of the Bestow stuff and just play more of the other good stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I do think this probably actually did have more interesting Bestow cards, but not as good Bestow cards. I think for people that play Bestow, I think we've learned that the cards have to be crazy above the curve in order for it to be worthwhile. Like, Astapor is one of those cards that I was calling a misprint card. It's too good and shouldn't have been printed. Begging Brother, I think, is actually good for the game, but I think the power level is extremely high on that card. Not a misprint card, but you can't print too many cards like it. It's more like a safety valve. Like, for how long were we saying that Treachery was possibly the best card in the game, or Ridiculously Above the Curve, or one of the most important cards in the game? And it's basically Treachery for characters on a stick, without the limitation of the unique Lanny. So I think that's the only other one, really other one, that seems to see play. I mean, I think Bestow kind of missed what we hoped and dreamed it would be.
Yeah. Kyle, Bestow?
Yeah, I don't think the Bestow part, like, look at these cards. How many Bestow cards are like, oh yeah, like, that's really great. Like, there's not a lot. It's, you don't punish having that imbalance between printed cost and quality of the of an actual quality enough. Like we talked about with Daharis, you know, it rewards you for having a character that you're going to assess as a 2, but really it's functioning like a 6. And there's just not enough of those effects to make it leverageable. So really, people just view it as sort of like a, how much mileage do I need at the moment? But how many times do you see Astapor get played with 2 gold on it? No, they wait for a turn, they dump all 4 on it, and that's just is what it is. They've assessed it as a 5 gold location that they're cool with. So I just struggle with Bestow as a whole. I was really excited for it when it came out. I was like, this is neat, because it kind of lets you have some variability in card value, but I don't think it's played out that way. And I very rarely do you see the cards that people actually bestow use anything other than that maximum value on it. Like, it's not functioning how I think it was intended.
Yeah, the only one that really does it is Begging Brother, and I think Begging Brother is just a unique bird that's very good for the game, but doesn't speak to the strength of the mechanic. It speaks to just the importance of trigger cancel.
Props and slops. Whew. Man, what to chat about this week. I've got one. Props to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. The last few episodes of this season, and at this point there's one episode left this season, but the last few episodes I think have really kind of stepped up their game. There's been a lot of comments and about things from the movies. They've straight up used Thanos' name. The Avengers have been mentioned, and different things that make the world feel much tighter than it had for the last couple seasons. So I'm really pumped about that. They've really gone full comic book with introducing the villain Graviton finally, and it works. It's actually really, really cool, and it looks like they are legitimately heading toward having the snap in the final episode of this season, which is going to be a little mind-blowing. I'm excited. They got renewed for season 6, which is even better. And it looks like we got some interesting news today that season 6 is going to be pushed to air in summer of 2019, which, of course, will make it after Captain Marvel and after Infinity War Part 2, whatever the name is now, Avengers 4, which I think is very interesting, and I think maybe points to closer TV movie connections than we've had before, with them pushing that later so they could, in my mind, you know, tie into things. So there we go. That's a lot of my excitement this week. Nobody else watches it.
I've been.
Bumping. I wish Jesse was on. I feel like he does.
No, I'm just not a comic book guy. I go see the Marvel movies sometimes if other people want to go with me. But I'll be honest, it has not been my bag. Lately, I've been dumping a bunch of time into a game that just went into version 1.0 on Steam called The Forest. It's kind of like a survival game, you know, food, water, build shelter, but with some big twists. The locals are not friendly. And so, yeah, it's been, I like real grindy, tough games like this where it's like, what'd you do today? And I'm like, I finished like a fence. And it's like, that was the one task in the hour and a half I got to play today that I did. Or I made like a water collector, like little things. So I like how difficult things are. And so it's proven to be very fun on that front. And you can multiplayer. So, you know, if we got some buddies, we could all die and be frustrated together, which is always, you know, the best way to die.
Flops to death.
Whoa.
Kyle's the one who brought up the subject.
I'm confused.
You said that's always the best way to die, so I said slops to death.
Oh, slops to death. I thought I said props to death, and I was like, I don't know where this is going.
Slops. That's bad. Life, good.
What is bad?
Props to life.
You know, like, bad weather has come to most of the country. You know,
thank
good it. Times are here. I always like beginning this, like, actual spring that we get for a bit. Probably my favorite time, so. Kudos to that, I would say. It's the things in general. Just like...
Whoa. Hi, Danny.
Slops flops to you when you think your mic is muted, and it's not.
Danny, come on the podcast.
Maybe we can figure that out time.
One day. She has some interesting stories. Just, if anyone's ever had a tournament with me and my wife, and you've got, like, 30 minutes skill, she has a... It's less relevant now, because things have changed, but, she doesn't play as much anymore, but obviously has a lot of friends in the community still. She likes to observe metas and how they behave, and she likes to talk through the psyche of metas. So, like, how California pseudo plays as a team till they get to the event, and then they, you know, get real hyper-competitive against each other, and so, like, the model breaks down, whereas, like, the old DC crew used to be a team the whole way through, and function almost more like a cult, like there was a hierarchy to it. And like a lot of the Midwest metas are like anti-metas, like we work so hard to not act like we're playing as a team that we almost cut each, like if you ever had a melee table with someone else from a Midwestern meta, they like intentionally are a dick to you just so no one thinks for a moment you were nice or played favorites. And she's like, it's just funny to watch the social dynamics of a big tournament go on as you get to know the people and understand what's happening. So it's kind of a neat little soapbox she gets on.
Cool. Maybe maybe that is an interesting topic to chat about. And then, you know, of course, have all those metas respond and dispute with the characterization of how they work. But, hey, you know, some chatting is always a good thing. I like feedback.
Feedback is good. Props to feedback. But I don't know if we want the arguments between all the metas, because that might put us in the danger zone.
Well done.
Yeah, it probably would.
Well done.